Blog Talk Radio.
This is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey. I want to thank everyone for being here, for tuning back in. Nice to have a week off. We were off last week, but it's Sunday and we're back doing it live. Again, every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for those of you who listen after the fact and occasionally curse at me for not telling you all when we go live. Sundays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's it. All right, tonight we're just previewing UFC 211. We'll talk a little bit about some of the other major news over the last couple of weeks, but primarily we're previewing UFC 211, a card so good that, well, the next like four fight nights kind of suck. This is a great card. This is a tremendous card. I am still praying it holds together. We got 6 days, and I'm praying it holds together because it's, again, tremendous card. Unfortunately, it does kind of lead us into a bit of a little bit of a downturn, because after this is the Johnson and Teixeira, not Johnson, excuse me, Gustafson and Teixeira card. And then there's UFC 212, which is a good main event. I love that main event. It's Aldo and Holloway. Then we get two or three fight nights in a row that are really, they're a little on paper. Always, again, that is the major qualifier. It's on paper. Because, again, as stacked as UFC 211 is, come fight night, well, anything can happen. And as we've seen in the sport of mixed martial arts, anything is much closer to the literal anything than in other sports. So that's on the agenda tonight. If you have a question or a comment, you want to call in, get on the air. The number to do so is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. All right, back with me, the regular partner in crime, the 411 jack of all trades, Jeffrey Harris, is here with us again. How you doing, Jeff?
Good evening, Robert. I hope you have recovered from the beating I gave you in Fact or Fiction MMA a couple weeks ago, and I hope you're recovering, right? I hope you're ready for this show. It was quite a competitive Fact or Fiction, but I think we can all agree that I came out on top with flying colors. So, thank you for taking it on.
What was the result?
It wasn't good.
Hang on, I'm gonna look it up. I'll look it up. Hang on, as Lorenzo's good about putting the results in next week's column. Apparently, it was a draw. Fair enough.
Well, it was a draw where I think we know who came out the real winner, and I think we all know that. I think we accept that I was the victim to move on and have a good show, right?
I don't have a whole lot wrapped up in. I do that because I think it's fun.
Winning.
I gave up on winning a long time ago.
Okay.
Well, I don't
again,
win.
I
don't win anything.
Is symbolic of how good of a loser you are and how you know how to take a loss on the chin, and you can accept that I'm the victor, and we can go from there, and it won't hurt our relationship, and things will be okay. It's okay that you lost here. You're a good host. You're still a good analyst, the commentator, and I think the world of you. But you weren't able to. And that's okay. It's okay that I'm the winner in this case because we can't win everything, though I win most of the time. So it's all right.
Hey, look, again, I'm rocking a pretty perfect record. All losses.
Right.
Again, I got so used to not winning anything. Like, I am a loser in life. I'm okay with it. I gave up, you know, all the, and not to get all therapy on everybody, I got over most of my suicidal impulses, and I still battle with depression, but I've generally got a handle on it at this point. So, really, I absolutely, I'm used to it. Again, I've been kicked in the teeth plenty of times. All right. Main event for UFC 211, speaking of getting kicked in the teeth. Rematch for the heavyweight title. Champion Stipe Miocic going after the last man that beat him, former champion Junior Dos Santos. These two had a heck of a slugfest December of 14, which I think is the UFC's free fight right now on their like YouTube page. So if you aren't subscribed to Fight Pass and you want to see this fight, it's a significant brawl. These two, they just beat the crap out of each other for 5 rounds. However, Miocic hasn't lost since. He dominated Mark Hunt to finish him in the fifth, knocked out Andrei Arlovsky in the first, knocked out Fabricio Werdum in the first, and knocked out Alistair Overeem in the first. Dos Santos, by contrast, defeated Miocic, went on, got stopped by Overeem, and rebounded a significant amount of time later. He was off for over a year, geez. Defeated Ben Rothwell by unanimous decision. And the somewhat unique nature of the heavyweight division lends itself towards the rematch here. I'm not sure how much can be gleaned from their first fight. I literally just rewatched it. I got done watching it about 5:45. I rewatched it just because I hadn't in a while, and it's a really fun slugfest. But both men have made alterations to their game in the interim. The biggest weakness in Dos Santos' game that Miocic was able to capitalize a bit on in their first fight, he tends to back all the way into the cage before trying to circle. It's a bad habit. That is the habit that Cain Velasquez primarily exploited to beat him. He backed him up. When he got along the fence and Junior tried to circle, he had no more, again, space to go backwards, so Cain always knew where he was going to be for his offense. That and, you know, Cain's obscene pace and just him being one of the better MMA heavyweights in history. Not the best, but one of the better ones, unequivocally. Miocic he's gotten better. Dos Santos, I think he's with American Top Team now. He's switched camps a couple of times. I forget exactly where he is at the moment, but I think that's it. In the Rothwell fight, he did a much better job of keeping his back off of the fence. It's still a bit of a problem that can be capitalized on, but he's working on it, so that's good. Stipe's very adept at fighting both moving forwards and backwards. His biggest weakness is when he starts throwing combinations. He's not as studious about getting his head off of the center line as he should be. That's where Junior dropped him with a left hook in their first fight. That's kind of where – it's not exactly where Overeem caught him in that fight because he just kind of in space and misjudged the distance, I think, when Overeem cracked him with that long left. But he does need to get his head off of the center line a little bit better. And he's done that when he was on the offense in the Overeem fight. I think he did a better job of that. But he's really got to here because Junior, he'll make you pay for that. The other issue that Stipe ran into in their first fight was both body work and conditioning because Junior tuned up his body a little bit. And when they got into the fourth and fifth rounds, he was kind of done. That was also his first time going that distance. And he's looked much better. Again, he dominated the Mark Hunt fight. And has been out of the first since then. I'm not sure. And his conditioning seems to have kind of generally improved. I'm not sure. I'm leaning towards Miocic here, primarily because of the wear and tear that Junior has accumulated. If you look at his last, what, four fights? I want to make sure I'm right about this. Let's say his last five. Six? Jeez, six fights. Yeah. He's gone 3-3 over his last six. He lost that lopsided decision to Cain to lose the title, all five rounds. Finished Mark Hunt in the third round of that. That was a pretty grueling fight. Fought Cain again, got into the fifth before getting finished. Went all five rounds with Stipe. Got knocked out by Overeem, and then went all five rounds to beat Rothwell. There's a significant amount of wear and tear on his body that's been accumulated. He's gone, again, not just, you know, five rounds, but he's gone been going five hard rounds. The mileage is a very real thing there. Miocic has tightened up a lot of his punching. He's punching a lot straighter more recently. His wrestling is still good. I'm not sure he's going to put too much effort into taking Junior down because Junior's hips are, even when he is battered, his takedown defense is very good, and he regains his feet quite well, especially against the cage. But just again, the miles on Junior, if this gets out of the first, I think it's all Stipe. That first, you know, the first 5 minutes are going to be tough. They're tougher in pretty much every fight. But after that, Miocic has improved tremendously in a lot of the areas that Junior was able to exploit in their first fight. Miocic seems to be in a much better place physically, mentally, and career-wise than Junior is. And again, just as long as he can avoid the first 5 minutes of real danger, Junior's chin isn't what it used to be. There's all that damage on him. I think Stipe probably finishes him before we go the distance. And Stipe gets, and we finally get to see Stipe versus Cain, because we all know that's where this is headed. All right, that's my analysis, such as it is. Feel free to take that or leave it. Jeff, what do you think about this one? You and I are both looking forward to this fight.
I love this fight because these two fighters are two better conditioned heavyweights in the division. And I think you'd also agree, two of the better more developed boxers in the division. First fight was very competitive. I don't know where you fell on it on the decision. I think I scored it for Junior Dos Santos at the time, even though you can maybe make an argument for Stipe doing more damage to Junior in that fight. Junior has been very hittable, and it's been a problem for him, I think, for the last several years, especially in the last two fights with Cain Velasquez. The fight with Ben Rothwell, I thought he looked a lot better. He really tightened up his boxing was there. It almost looked in that fight. Interestingly enough, Junior is younger than Stipe Miocic, believe it or not. Completely counted out here because he is so ill. And he is so experienced. Heavyweight, Stipe Miocic. Stipe is well-rounded. He has footwork in boxing. He has pretty good cardio. And he has decent grappling skills, decent wrestling as well. The mark against Miocic in the past was that he was more of a defensive, more technical fighter. And then he started knocking guys out. Verdum was pretty unbeatable for the longest time. Verdum went on a streak. Brown was actually a legit heavyweight. Knocked out Mark Hunt with a flying knee and submitted Cain Velasquez. That's one. I mean, even at heavyweight, Robert, that's one of the more astounding runs you can get. And Miocic was the guy who ended that run for Fabrizio Verdum. So I'm picking here. I think I could see this going all five rounds or ending later into the fight. I think it's going to. going to be very difficult. And but I don't think it's, Junior has a big chin on it.
All right. Yeah, that should be a good one. And again, I think Kane's next for the winner regardless. I think that's
okay. So his only two knockouts were from Kane and Overeem.
Yeah.
So he's never been like straight just knocked out with one punch before though. So I could see Stipe doing that to Junior, not like after a sustained beating. That's what I think is going to happen. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he got tagged repeatedly by Overeem, but he didn't get dropped by just one punch. The Velasquez
right.
one was just the accumulation.
And that was after a war. And that was after a war where he got tagged repeatedly by Stipe, and he didn't go down. But you know, you could tell he had been through quite an ordeal after that fight was over. People were really worried about Junior after that fight, if you remember.
I was one of them. But, yeah, again, I think Kane's next for the winner. They've got the rematch between Overeem and Verdum set for a little later this year. But the UFC, they seem to really want Kane as the champion.
Yeah, but I mean, think about this. Junior sort of lucked into this title fight, Robert, and he lucked into it after having one win over Rothwell because Kane is constantly getting hurt and constantly can't fight. Miocic had already fought and beaten Overeem. You know, surging fighters right now, Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou, they weren't really in a position to fight for the title for their next fights. It probably would have been too early. So Junior was sort of in an advantageous position where he was the last man to beat Stipe and coming off a strong win, but he'd only just won one fight. I mean,
yeah.
In any other division, pretty much in any other division in the UFC, that's really not going to happen at all.
Yeah, here in light heavyweight are pretty much the only places you're going to see something like that. But yeah, it should be a tremendous fight. All right, co-main event. Yet another fight I'm looking forward to. Joanna Jędrzejczyk is trying to defend the strawweight title for, I believe, the fifth time. As she fights Jessica Andrade. Joanna would set the record here. I think if Joanna wins this fight, she will have the most consecutive wins by any woman in UFC history. I'll have to double check that. She might have already broken that, because Ronda used to hold that record, and I think Joanna's broken it. This is another very good fight. Jessica Andrade was a very competitive bantamweight. And really, if they introduce flyweight, which I believe is the plan for women, she'll probably settle in there. She's coming off of that win over Angela Hill, which was... That was a weird fight. I mean, a lot of action, but a really weird tactical, from the tactics side of things, really weird. Joanna, again, coming... I'm a little... This is one of the more significant dangers to Joanna's title reign. I mean, again, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One, I talked about it with Junior as far as getting a lot of miles on him. Joanna's last three fights have gone the five-round distance. And those weren't easy fights. Those were competitive... I mean, competitive is the right word, but it's not the word I'm trying to... It's an accurate word. It's not the word I'm looking for. Those were grueling fights in a lot of ways. Those were... I mean, she won all three of them by notable margins. I mean, Letourneau at best got one round. Carolina only got one round. And, you know, I think Claudia got two rounds, but just faded so hard after that. But there's still a lot of miles that come with that many consecutive five-round fights, and it's a concern. The other thing about this is less so, you know, just the miles that Joanna's accumulated. There's a style element to this one. Jessica Andrade is a tank. She likes to bull forward, get in the pocket, and throw hooks. That's primarily her offensive game. Now, it's not only her offensive game. She has solid takedowns. There's a good submission game as well. I don't want to sell her short here, but that's primarily what she does. She bulls forward, head down, swinging to the body and head with hooks. Kind of like John Lineker. If you've never seen her fight but have seen Lineker, there's a decent enough baseline comparison there. It's not completely accurate, but if you just need a touchstone. The other thing that kind of concerns me here is the grappling, because Andrade is a good grappler. Now, getting Joanna down is not easy, but it can be done. Part of the reason she was so successful fending off other grapplers, again, like Jessica Penne or Carla Esparza, or both times she fought Claudia Gadelha, one of the major successes she was able to have was anytime someone got her down, they were trying to hold her there. And so when she's fighting to get back up, they're less inclined to start throwing during that transition. Jessica Andrade does not need to hold you down. If she gets you down and you get back up, she's going to punch you in the face while you're doing so. And that's an area that has me a little concerned. If she can force that specific game plan style, you know, get close, get takedowns, and then just in those in-between spaces where Joanna has to, you know, post to get up, or you have to keep your head high when you're trying to regain your feet or wall walk, you're exposed to blows there. And if you're not actively trying to resecure a takedown like, you know, Claudia was constantly, there's openings for offense there that Andrade is more inclined to take advantage of based on her style. The other concerning portion of that whole thing is Joanna, if you do pressure her, she's a little bit straight line retreat, especially if you get close. She'll back kind of straight up. And if you get against the fence with Jessica Andrade, that's where things get dicey. Now, in terms of pure technique, Joanna is superior. She has a much sharper jab, a sharper all-around game, but she has to keep this at distance. And she cannot choose to brawl. If Andrade tries to force a brawl, she cannot engage there. That's where Andrade has the best chance of winning. Now, all that being said, I'm still going with Joanna here. I think there's elements of what Angela Hill did against Jessica that she can adapt to much more successfully. A lot of the straight punches that can land as Jessica's moving forward. Even if you get close and you start swinging, Jessica keeps her head right in the center. She might duck, so you need to choose uppercuts maybe instead of straight punches. But she's still very hittable in that space. Again, the jab is a very important weapon. And I don't think Joanna's going to get sucked into just brawling with a brawler like Andrade. But I think if you're completely discounting Jessica Andrade in this fight, you're making a significant error. Again, I'm still going with Joanna, but this is a significant threat to her title reign, as far as that goes. But I think she'll probably outpoint Jessica or Andrade over a decision. Might even finish her late if Andrade fades. Andrade has never been five rounds at strawweight. I know she hasn't at bantamweight either. But 5 rounds after a weight cut is a whole different thing. And if you've never had to actually fight into those, you know, the fourth and fifth rounds, it's a significantly different experience. So she might get, she could possibly get a late finish, but this one could, I'm more inclined to think this one goes the distance, but Joanna's superior technique will carry the decision. But again, this is another great fight. And this one is another one that, again, could very easily go the way of Jessica Andrade. Don't discount her by any stretch of the imagination. All right, Jeff, what do you think about this one? We've got two women who bring violence.
I do not discount at all. As you said, she is a tank. She has power. I think Joanna has already passed Ronda in terms of most consecutive wins in the UFC at 7. I think Ronda had, pretty sure she had 6, unless you count her Strikeforce wins. But Joanna stands to defend her title for the 5th time here, and I think Ronda has the most has the highest record for title defenses for women with 6 in the UFC. I think Andrade possibly poses the biggest physical threat to Joanna in her entire title run. That being because of Joanna's technique and the way she fights and the way she's able to goes longer, makes me lean more toward her. Yes, she arguably has more miles on her body and maybe a little more wear and tear, but Robert, she also has more experience fighting 5 rounds. How many times has Jessica been to the championship rounds in her career?
I don't think at all. Yes,
she's never been
to rounds 4 or 5.
Exactly. She's fought in surprisingly enough, she was a decent bantamweight, and she's done very well for herself since moving down to women's strawweight. That being said, I mean, Angela Hill is not exactly an elite opponent. Joanne Calderwood, that was a solid win for her. Jessica Penne, solid win. I mean, she's had a nice run. I don't think she's faced the same level of competition that Joanna has and just proven time and time again just how good of a competitor she is. And what I see from Joanna, more so than Jessica, is Joanna is able to make adjustments on the fly. If she's having problems, she's able to take the fight back where it needs to so she has the advantage. We saw that in the Valerie Letourneau fight. We saw that against Claudia Gadelha and even Carolina Kovalkiewicz. They gave her a little trouble early on in those encounters, but Joanna ultimately she has great resilience, and she's good. Not only that, Robert, she's good at fighting at distance. She's good at finding rhythm, fighting at distance, throwing combinations. She has some of the best standing combinations, I think, in all of MMA. Great. She's pretty much everywhere. And I don't think Jessica is going to be able to easily take her to the ground. And even if she does, I feel like Joanna will recover and keep the fight where it needs to. But Jessica has power. She has power that's very equalizing. She has good grappling skills. But a lot of women who are strong grapplers have simply had trouble trying to impose that game on Joanna. So while I see ways that Jessica can win, and I'm not counting her out at all at pulling off an upset, I'm picking Joanna merely because of past experience and because of how she fights in these championship wars. And I feel in a championship war, I pick, a young prime undefeated Joanna against a Jessica Andrade. But I think it's going to be a very good fight, a competitive fight, and I can't wait to see what happens here.
Huh, I did not realize this. I knew part of this. I knew Joanna had the highest significant strike differential in UFC championship history. I knew that. She also has the second highest significant strike differential in UFC championship history and the third highest significant strike differential in UFC championship history. Jeez. All three. She's a buzzsaw. All right. Next up, featured bout. Oh, this fight I wish was 5 rounds. I genuinely wish this fight was 5 rounds. Damian Maia, who is the, in many ways, rightful welterweight contender to the title, fights Jorge Masvidal. Boy, howdy, is this a good fight. Damian Maia hasn't lost since February of 2014, when he lost a decision to Roy McDonald. He's won, what, 6? Yeah, 6 in a row. He's finished 3 of those. He's finished Neil Magny, Matt Brown, and Carlos Condit. again, he should be fighting for the belt. And he wanted to stay busy, and this is as far from an easy fight as you can possibly get, I think, in Jorge Masvidal. Man, Masvidal on a 3-fight winning streak. I mean, his last two losses were split decisions, one of which I thought was clearly his, the Larkin fight I scored for him. I also thought he won that Iaquinta fight. Holy crap. If judges didn't suck, he would have one of the most ridiculous recent records. Man. Anyway, he's on a 3-fight winning streak. He beat Ross Pearson by decision and then stopped both Jake Ellenberger and Donald Cerrone with strikes. All right, I know the striker versus grappler narrative, as far as MMA goes, is more than a little played out. But it is the truth here. Jorge Masvidal wants to stay as far away from the mat with Damian Maia as possible, as do most sane people. And Damian Maia does not want to engage in a prolonged striking affair with Jorge Masvidal. The real question becomes, can Masvidal stop Maia from... I mean, Maia's game is very simple, and I don't mean that as a negative. I have to reference this again, but for those of you who don't know, there's a combat sports account on both Twitter and Facebook. A gentleman who goes by the name of BJJ Scout has a 3-part series on YouTube, and I think it's on his Facebook page as well, that is just about Damian Maia's game from a grappling perspective. The way he gets into the takedowns he chooses, his passing game. It's phenomenal stuff. It was really enlightening for me when I watched it, because I didn't have the vocabulary and the analytics to really break down why Maia is so good. I knew he was good, but the specifics and the details were beyond me. You should be following his stuff anyway. He's a tremendous, tremendous analyst. But Maia tries to force you towards the fence, and as soon as you're in that space, you don't even have to be actually on the fence, just where he can get you there with a shot. He goes for a single leg, spins you down, passes, and when you make a mistake trying to regain your feet, he gets your back, and then it's essentially all over. It's very basic in that sense. It's not the most dynamic of guard games or things like that. But he has taken these basic elements and he has essentially perfected them. And at my first karate instructor, something he said that has always stuck with me: the best technique is the simplest when you can execute it right. And Damian Maia may not be doing anything fancy, but you had better be exceptional when it comes to stopping what he does. Now, Masvidal's wrestling constantly gets, I think, a little bit underappreciated because he's, primarily a striker. That's where he likes to be. But in terms of both getting takedowns and stopping takedowns, he's very good. He was able to take down Benson Henderson and Rustam Khabilov. He's really good at reactive takedowns. Again, if you overcommit in a direction, he can sweep you. He's not out of his game there. And again, it's not where he wants to be in this instance, but stopping takedowns for him is not the same as someone who doesn't know how to grapple at all trying to stop them. He's pretty good at stopping takedowns. Not otherworldly and not impossible to take down, but he's good at it. And on the feet, Masvidal is the better fighter. He should be using body work. Because Damian Maia can fade a bit. He keeps a pretty furious pace, which is weird when you think of Damian Maia, but Maia keeps a solid pace, and he's been known to gas a bit. Masvidal has to kind of play to that. Again, body work, especially with punches, if you don't want to risk kicks. Again, his boxing is superior. This is really just a question of, again, can Masvidal stop what Maia wants to do? I'm not sure he can do it consistently enough to get the win. He might. Again, I said this, the last like 3 fights. You're an idiot if you count out Jorge Masvidal. And I am not shocked if he wins unless, I mean, again, if he catches a flying armbar, I will be shocked. But if he lands a good couple of punches, if he's able to keep this fight in the center of the cage where Maia struggles a little bit more with his takedowns, if he's able to, you know, and outpoint him to a decision, I'm not going to be surprised one bit. Jorge Masvidal is an exceptional fighter. And really, if he were to fight Tyron Woodley for the belt, I might actually pick him. I have to really think about that one, but he's that good. I still think Maia will be able to force his game in this fight. And I don't know if he'll get a finish. Again, once he gets your back, he's dangerous. Masvidal is really good at blocking submissions, though. Again, that's the strength of his game. So I'm going with Maia. Again, not sure if he'll get the finish or not, but he's been on top form recently. I'm going with Maia. But again, count out Masvidal at your own peril, guys. He's darn good. And again, I wish this was five rounds. I wish this was a five-round fight. I hate contender fights that are three rounds, especially with, you know, because I don't like split decisions over three rounds determining who fights for the title. I'd much rather this was a main event of a fight night and we got five rounds of this. But, such is life. Should be a great fight. All right, Jeff. Is Masvidal going to pull it off here? Is he going to go to four in a row
no.
and then go on to take the belt?
Call me an idiot, Robert, because I am counting out George Masvidal here. Damian Maia, all in. He's winning this fight. Name one grappler on Damian Maia's level that Masvidal has faced in his career. Name one.
Let me see. He's had a long career. Hang on, let me look.
The only other one comparatively like a top level grappler is probably Gilbert Melendez. And that was in 2011.
Yeah. I wouldn't put Melendez even close to Maia's level.
All right. There's
Benson Henderson's closer to Maia's level than Gilbert Melendez is as far as his grappling
goes.
All right,
and even in those fights,
maybe Yamada, Toby Yamada, but I think that's it. And even he's a little bit on the gimmicky side.
In that fight, and he lost to Toby. He got submitted by Toby Yamada in 2009. Now,
yeah, inverted triangle choke. It was a crazy submission.
Look, even the fights he lost by split decision, to me, those, even if you think he won those fights weren't really emphatic wins. And while Masvidal has looked good lately, he's been, for a lot of his career, he's been somewhat of a journeyman and sort of very inconsistent. He's been competitive, you know, with guys at lightweight, at welterweight, but he's sort of struggled to really emerge as an elite contender. Save for what he's been doing lately, and he's looked outstanding, don't get me wrong. But Damian Maia is a whole other can of worms. And I think you're greatly underestimating just how formidable Damian Maia is. And you should be counting out George Masvidal against Damian Maia, quite frankly. Quite frankly, Robert, I think you're an idiot for not going all in on Damian Maia here. Damian Maia wins this fight. I'm counting out George Masvidal because Damian Maia is going to give him hell for all night long.
Again, I expect Maia to win. I expect Maia to beat Woodley for the belt when they fight for it, but I'm just done being surprised by Masvidal
loses,
overperforming.
The only way Maia loses is if he does what he did against Nate Marquardt. That's the only way. And jumps right into like a straight overhand hook or something. That's the only way he will lose.
All right, next up, another fight.
Do you remember that fight?
I do. I remember that fight. He kind of hops right into that straight right from Marquardt. One punch, clean, unconscious.
Okay, and that was a long time. And that was a long time ago. And I don't see that happening here. He's going to make George Masvidal pay.
Now, again, I expect him to win. I really do. But I'm done being surprised when Masvidal overperforms in circumstances. All right. Why is Frankie Edgar not in a three-round fight? Frankie Edgar should just never be in three-round fights. Next up, we have Frankie Edgar taking on Yair Rodriguez. I hate trying to analyze Yair Rodriguez's fights because he does so much stupid stuff. When he doesn't
that
do
stuff
the
stuff works though.
No,
it works. It's effective.
About a third of what he does is effective.
You say a third, but I mean, has he lost a fight yet in the UFC? Nope.
Not officially, but at least one he should have. The Rosa fight. He got the benefit of Clucky on that one. The others no.
All
the
right.
Others haven't been. I mean, look, if you rewatch the fight with Alex Caceres, just count the number of times his stuff completely whiffs.
He won that fight. I'm sorry.
I'm not
he
saying
totally
no, no.
Won
he
that
won.
Fight.
That's because Alex Caceres is. I mean, he's not the worst guy in the UFC, but
well, look at the fight with Andre Feely.
He missed a bunch of stupid tornado kicks and jumping knees, and then he got the right distance and he landed the one that mattered.
That pace works for him because his opponents have trouble keeping up with that.
Have had to this point.
Okay.
I mean, again, if he's gonna go out there and do all that crazy stuff against someone who doesn't know how to counter it, it's gonna work. Unfortunately, he's in there with someone who should know how to counter it, in Frankie Edgar.
Right. I mean, I like Edgar for this one as well, and I like this as a test for Yair Rodriguez. This is Rodriguez might not even be ready for a fight like this, Robert. But
I don't think he is. To be perfectly honest, I mean.
But we need to see him. We need to see him in these type of matchups if he is going to be like a major contender someday. He needs to get tested against guys like Frankie.
Also true. Here's kind of what – I don't want to say what threw me about this because Yair apparently wanted to fight Frankie Edgar, and the number of people saying I want to fight Frankie Edgar is extremely small. But Frankie has only lost to Jose Aldo since 2013.
Right.
He's lost to him twice.
But that doesn't mean – but, you know, look, a lot of fighters have these stats, where they look unbeatable and then they lose. That's no reason a guy like Yair should not want to challenge himself and not want
no,
to try and climb.
I have nothing but respect for Yair saying, yeah, I want to fight Frankie Edgar.
See, if fighters had that view, look, Robert, if Frank Mir had that view, he never would have stepped into the cage with Rodrigo Nogueira, and he never would have won that fight. Because at the time, the only man to beat Nogueira was Fedor Emelianenko, and he couldn't even stop Nogueira. So, I mean, fighters.
No, he lost
not...
his split decision to Dan Henderson as well.
I mean, in so many years at the time.
Yeah. No, yeah, he was. And
comparative. That's my point here. Fighters should not go into a fight thinking, like, this guy is not beatable and only such and such fighter has beaten him in such amount of time, or he's never been stopped, never been finished, he's only lost by, like, that should not deter a guy from getting into the octagon with someone. I mean, I if Yair asked for this fight, I respect him all the more. And even in the losing effort, fighters should be trying to test themselves to see how far they can go. Otherwise, you know, we'd never see fights with elite competitors like this.
No, I agree. And I hope Yair settles down with a lot of his again, I'm not the biggest fan of the old tornado kick, the 360 spins.
Right.
Because even the stuff, if you look at the stuff that Yair lands that's really effective, it's not that, you know, big charging 360-degree outside crescent kick. That misses by a mile more often than not.
Okay.
being
well,
able to hit
you
a.
You don't know he'll fight the same against Frankie Edgar either.
I hope he doesn't, because if he does, he has almost no chance.
I thought he looked. I mean, he was fighting the corpse of BJ Penn, but he wasn't like he wasn't throwing everything in the kitchen sink at BJ Penn when they fought, as I recall.
No, he was a lot more restrained when he fought BJ Penn. And again, the Feely win. Find the right technique, and you know, the jumping switch kick like that is actually a much more effective technique than most people give it credit for.
But now,
he's
never fought a guy with Frankie's wrestling pedigree either.
Not even
That's
close.
That's the thing I'm really curious about, because the type of techniques Rodriguez tends to like to use leave him very open from a guy like Frankie. And if I'm Frankie, I don't even want to try and stand with Rodriguez. I want to try and take him to the ground and see how well he does on the ground, because that's really an area we've never seen out of Rodriguez before. I don't think.
Anytime he turns his hips and starts to go all the way around, Frankie should, like, dive on them.
I agree.
But I'm picking
Frankie here by decision. I think it'll be an interesting fight, though.
Yeah, I got Frankie by decision. He'll probably get hit. He'll probably get rocked at one point because it seems like
Frankie.
He always does. I mean, look, if you want to know if you're in trouble when you're fighting Frankie Edgar, there's really only one question you have to ask. Is his nose bleeding after the first round? Because if in the first 5 minutes of combat you have not gotten Frankie Edgar's nose to bleed, you're in for a world of pain. Because Frankie Edgar's nose will bleed if you look at it hard enough. But I feel like this is just too much too soon for Rodriguez. I applaud him for wanting the fight. And, you know, again, if Frankie isn't well prepared for a little of the craziness, he might lean into one of those. And that's what happened to Andre Feely. He thought Yair was throwing the outside low leg kick with the lead leg, so he reached down for it, left his head wide open for the jumping switch. And he's got to be ready for that, but Frankie is the model of consistency. He's not unbeatable, but he's very consistent. And I'm just not sure Yair's ready for a guy who's going to be able to mix things up this well, who's as relentless as Frankie is, and who can push a pace like Frankie. I mean, Yair fought 5 rounds at a very similar pace against Alex Caceres, but he got to fight those rounds at the pace he dictated, not the pace his opponent dictated. And Frankie's very good at forcing you to fight in an uncomfortable position and wearing guys out. Even guys who have good conditioning have struggled under Frankie's pace. I got Edgar by decision, but there's a lot of fun to be had in that fight. All right, and kicking off the main card. Crazy as it sounds, this could crown the next flyweight contender, as Olympic gold medalist Henry Cejudo will fight Sergio Pettis. Now, Cejudo's on a 2-fight losing streak. He got stopped by Demetrius Johnson in the first round in one of DJ's best performances in a lot of respects. Then he had that weird split decision with Joseph Benavidez that I maintain the appropriate scoring of as a draw, but hey, what do I know, right? So he's unlikely to get a title shot if he wins, although he might. The division's in a weird spot. But on the other end, we have Sergio Pettis, who's on a 3-fight winning streak with decisions over Chris Carriasso, Chris Kalidis, and John Moraga. And really, the John Moraga fight was the best he's looked in the UFC. And it's hard to predict Sergio Pettis because he is so still kind of young in the sport. There's a lot of room for improvement. And I don't mean that as a derogatory necessarily, because he is working to improve. Some guys, you know, they've been around for a long time. There's not a whole lot of room for improvement. There is with Pettis, but he's continuing to improve. So it's, you know, room for growth. Might be an appropriate way to phrase that and less of a pejorative. Anyway. Pettis is a bit more well-rounded, but he hasn't fought a really strong wrestler yet. Has he? Hang on, I got to double check that. Let me see. You have Campuzano, Caceres, Meza, Hobart, Benoit. Not really. He hasn't really fought a strong wrestler. And Henry Cejudo is a strong wrestler. Cejudo is also not afraid to throw punches. I tend to think Pettis is a little bit more diverse in his striking offense, but Cejudo has decent kicks. Cejudo will have more power. Sergio has good technique, but he's not a big power striker. I mean, let me say this. I don't think I'll be too surprised if Pettis wins. Because, again, there is room for massive growth in his game, and he could very well be hitting that stride. But there's something about the kind of blood and guts. I'm okay getting in your face, throwing punches, mixing it up, that Henry Cejudo brings, that I'm interested to see how Pettis responds to, but leads me to kind of think Cejudo by decision. Not sold, and again, I won't be surprised if either guy wins this one. But I'm just leaning Cejudo a bit at the moment. And that one might come back to bite me, but that's where I'm leaning right now. Jeff, does Baby Pettis earn a date with Mighty Mouse?
I don't think so here, but I guess you're on the same wavelength I am, where Pettis will be the next fighter to likely receive a title shot with a win here, correct?
That's my thinking. I mean, he only has the one loss at flyweight.
Right. And he has, if he were to win here, I think he would have the best winning streak.
He would have four fights in a row, and he would have just beaten, Henry Cejudo.
Former title contender.
And he'd be one of the few guys in the top 10 that Demetrius Johnson hasn't blown out of the water already.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I don't know. I wonder, a part of me wonders if we've seen Cejudo's ceiling in MMA, and another part of me wonders if he's just really hard to beat other than Johnson, because he has that loss to Benavidez, but a lot of people don't see that as a legitimate loss. And I guess it depends on that. He sort of lost that fight on a technicality. And this,
well, and even in the loss, that was an extremely competitive fight, if nothing else.
Right. Here's has a lot of flaws, okay? And I mean, did he not almost get finished in the last round of that fight with Chris Carriasso? Did Carriasso almost stop him at UFC 192?
I think so. I'm trying to remember the fight
here,
specifically, but it got pretty close. That might have been the one that got close, because Carriasso lost.
Yeah, I feel like here's what was basically happening in that fight. Pettis was, almost dominating him most of that fight. I think a couple times he almost stopped Carriasso. And then he almost got finished or stopped in the last round, but Pettis won the fight on the scorecards. So Pettis is not good at finishing people at flyweight. I mean, Pettis is a good fighter. He's a good fighter. He's earned his spot on the roster. But he's never had what his older brother has had. And I think it's been tough for him in a fight in the UFC and, sort of be in the shadow of a brother, who won, the WEC lightweight title, the UFC lightweight title, and had so much success. And I think the problem with that is, Robert, is that because he's Anthony Pettis' brother, people expect the same people expect similar things out of Sergio, because of his age. And, he was undefeated when he came into the UFC. And in his UFC debut, I recall he won that fight with Campuzano, but Campuzano, I think, gave him a lot of problems in that fight. So I just don't feel great about picking Pettis here, just because Pettis has not shown me enough in his UFC career to make me confident that he can win this whole fight. So I'm going to go ahead and pick Cejudo by decision. I might regret it later, but I like Cejudo here.
All right, that's the main card. Yeah. Look, I love that main card. That is a and there's
some
good prelims.
We got some really good.
Here's my
good
only
names,
gripe.
At least.
I have one gripe about this event, and I want to say it here because I'm going to list all these prelim fights. I want you all to understand my reticence in some respects. There's 13 fights on this card, and the broadcast could take 8 hours. First prelim to main event. That's a long time. That's all I'm saying. 8 hours is a long time.
Well, hopefully there will be some shenanigans that get a couple of these fights canceled over the next week.
I mean, really, if we had a minor issue and even one of the main card fights fell through, you have at least two fights on the prelims that could move up. And then, again, you could make you if it's a minor thing and you can just reschedule them for a couple of weeks down the line or so, again, there's some fight night cards coming up that could use bolstering. I looked at the schedule, and I'm, again, the next three fight nights kind of make me go, yeah. But anyway, on the prelims, we have more violence. Main eventing the prelims. The preliminaries are on FX for this one because there's other major events going on Fox Sports 1. Eddie Alvarez is fighting Dustin Poirier. Again, violence. There will be a lot of it. These are violent fighters. Eddie Alvarez coming off of that loss to Conor McGregor, man. Where he... Eddie Alvarez has a lot going for him. He's got hard punches. He's well-rounded, strong wrestler, good brawler. You know, if he is in the clinch, his dirty boxing is quite good. I think his biggest problem is in-cage decision-making, because this is a guy who decided it was a good idea to spend 3 rounds kickboxing with Donald Cerrone and do very little to try and mitigate that. He kept trying to wrestle Michael Chandler when Chandler was out-wrestling him. I mean, that was a crazy fight anyway. And then fighting Conor, he never really tries to force McGregor into the situations where we know McGregor is weak. And I'm not sure how that's going to play out against Dustin Poirier. Poirier, another guy who kind of likes to brawl. He's coming off of the majority decision over Jim Miller. It was a pretty good fight. Prior to that, got knocked out by Michael Johnson because he stopped moving his head off the center line. Ugh. But he had a good winning streak going before that. I anticipate these two getting in there and just... this is going to be a blood and guts brawl. There's a lot of that that's going to come out of this fight. And I can see either guy winning. I think Poirier's ability to decide on a path to victory and adjust that a little bit on the fly might be his greatest advantage here, because he's a very good grappler as well. His takedowns aren't quite as good as Alvarez's, but they're good enough. Neither guy gives much thought for defense when it comes to striking. I think Poirier could make the adjustments necessary as the fight goes on, as opposed to Eddie Alvarez, but I might be wrong about that, but I'm going with Poirier by decision. But violence in that fight, that's a really good fight. At featherweight, we have Chaz Skelly against Jason Knight. Jason Knight, the redneck Diaz brother. His only UFC loss was a short notice one against Tetsuya Kawajiri. Beat Jim Ehlers, beat Dan Hooker, finished Alex Caceres. He's on a 3-fight winning streak. I mean, Chaz Skelly is, he's nobody to sneeze at. His only losses in the UFC are to Mirsad Bektic and Darren Elkins. Two top-shelf featherweights there. He submitted Maximo Blanco with that anaconda choke. I'm actually leaning towards Jason Knight a little bit here. I'm not sold on that, but I think Knight's going to keep rising a bit until he really hits the next level of competition up from where he's at. I think that's where he'll struggle. Where he is right now, I think he's fine to keep winning. David Branch is back in the UFC. He fought in the UFC before. He was the simultaneous middleweight and light heavyweight champion of World Series of Fighting. His last Man, he's been remarkably consistent. He has only three losses. Two of them are in the UFC. He got knocked out on a slam by Gerald Harris. He got submitted by Husamar Palhares with a knee bar. Then in Titan, he fought Anthony Johnson and lost, and hasn't lost since. He's got a significant winning streak dating back to 2012. I'm glad he's back in the UFC. I thought he might have got a bit of a raw deal as far as being in the UFC a little bit early. But he's fighting Christoph Yatko, who's only lost once in the UFC, is on a 5-fight winning streak, and has proven himself someone you really ought to pay attention to at middleweight. I'm going with Yatko here, actually. He's just looked phenomenal lately. That win over Talos Latis was really good. That's a good fight. At lightweight, you have Marco Polo Reyes and James Vick. Ooh. There's some potential there. James Vick defeated Abel Trujillo, had that loss to Benil Dariush. I mean, James Vick's pretty good. Reyes is a bit one-dimensional. I mean, he likes to brawl. He's had some good ones. Again, his brawl with the maestro, Dongyun Kim, is still one of the craziest fights ever. I'm going with Vick there, though. All right, on Fight Pass, Jessica Aguilar is fighting Courtney Casey. Aguilar had that loss to Claudia Gadelha in her UFC debut. That was a while ago. That was August of 15. Jeez. And she had... Ugh. That gives me pause. She's fighting Courtney Casey. I mean, Casey has had an up-and-down UFC run. She lost to Joanne Calderwood, lost to Seo Heehan, lost to Claudia Gadelha, but she had a couple of solid wins in between those. Yeah, this might be nostalgic. I'm not sure. I'm leaning Aguilar there, but I'm very prepared to be wrong. At featherweight, we have Jared Gordon facing Michelle Quinones. I think I'll go with Gordon there. Quinones was a little bit too wild for my taste last time I saw him. At heavyweight, Chase Sherman fights Rashad Coulter. I don't know who Coulter is, and I do recall Sherman's name, but heavyweights, who knows? Going with Sherman. At featherweight, Gabriel Benitez will fight Enrique Barzola. I know both of those gentlemen's names. They can't quite place them. I think they're from some tough Latin America seasons. I'll go with Benitez, but that's just a mental coin flip. And at light heavyweight, Joachim Christensen will fight Gadzimurad Antigulov. I'm actually going with Antigulov here. He hit a really nice setup guillotine on, I think it was Marcos Rogério de Lima, who, you know, debatably should not be in the UFC. But I'm going with Antigulov there. It's low-level light heavyweights. I just hope it doesn't suck too much. All right. Jeff, that's our batch of prelims. It's not a bad bunch of fights. What are you looking forward to out of that group?
Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier. That's a huge fight, especially for Poirier. This is a fight for Poirier where he really can put it all on the line and really get to the level he wants to. But this is also the type of fight where Poirier has come up short before. Chaz Skelly versus Jason Knight is a really good fight. Christoph Yatko, that's a good, tough fight for Dave Branch. Look, Dave Branch did very well for himself outside of the UFC, but now he's back in the UFC, and now he wants to try and make a name for himself again. Yatko is very underrated. I would say he's pretty legitimately ranked number 9 in the division. You know, 5-fight winning streak, 7-1 at middleweight. Pretty impressive. But Branch can win here and solidly enter the top 10 of the middleweight division. But, you know, we've seen guys, you know, sort of burn out the UFC quickly, leave the UFC, you know, win some other titles, do well in other organizations, and then they come back and don't do very well. Some come back and do very well, like Robbie Lawler. But then remember George Santiago? He had a very impressive run after he left the UFC the first time. Then he came back, didn't do all too well. So I'm curious to see what Branch has learned and if he can apply it in the UFC again, and if he can have an impressive run here. But really, this is a really good lineup of prelims, a lot of underrated talent, especially, and I'm looking forward to seeing Jessica Aguilar fight again. I'm leaning toward her to win the fight against Courtney Casey. Just, you know, look, Casey's, for a fighter like Aguilar, this is basically a gimme fight. But we haven't seen Aguilar fight in a while, and her UFC debut didn't go very well, so we'll see. But I like the matchup, and I'm looking forward to seeing Aguilar fight again. So overall, a very good card, and I'm very excited about this card. It could be one of the best lineups of the year.
Yeah, I'm still hoping it holds together. And when we get to about 48 to 36 hours before the event, I'll start really hoping the fights deliver. But until then, I'm just hoping that the card holds together.
Well, look, if some fights fall off, I mean, you know, they're stocked pretty well. If something falls off the main card, you know, you can easily throw Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier onto pay-per-view, because that's a pay-per-view quality matchup. And then you have a bunch of other solid matchups to pick up the slack throughout the prelims. But man, that is a lot of prelims. Let me see here. We have 5 plus 4. It's a lot. It's a lot of fights.
It's a lot.
Do we usually have this many fights on Fight Pass? So we have 5 fights on Fight Pass, 5 on pay-per-view. That's 14 fights total. Usually, I don't think it's ever been this many.
Not in a really long time. I mean, again, if you go back towards the Dark Ages, you might find one, but normally it's 12. I think 12 is the average. 12 fights per card, top to bottom.
That's a lot, but yeah.
It's a lot.
Godspeed, Robert. Godspeed.
Yeah. I'm really hoping, I think they mentioned that they're looking at like an 8-hour broadcast from start to finish.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I'm hoping for good action.
And you know, for the guys working on the events, it's even longer. For a guy like you reporting on it. Excuse me.
No, it's, again, 8 hours is a long time, so we're just hoping for, because this is one of the few times when, if we get a really bad stretch of fights, combined with that amount of time, I'm hoping
like
I don't fall asleep.
It's like walking through concrete. It's like walking through quicksand, basically.
It can be a slog. It can really be a slog, so I'm hopeful. I am optimistic about this card. I'll say that, which usually means I'm going to get kicked in the teeth again, but I think it's worth it in this instance. All right. Again, UFC 211. I will have live coverage in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com come Saturday. So stop by, say hello. I appreciate it. All right, Jeff, it's been we had a week off. So what's the major news that's come out over the last few days? What do you want to talk about?
I think we have another title fight lined up for UFC 213. Right now, it looks like Amanda Nunes versus Valentino Shevchenko for the bantamweight belt will likely happen at UFC 213. It's not official yet, but it looks like that's the fight. So it would join the TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt bantamweight fight. Two other fights got announced for UFC 213. These are pretty big fights. We have Alistair Overeem versus Fabrizio Verdum at heavyweight. And then at welterweight, it looks like Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone, one of the most exciting welterweight matchups of all time, will be happening at that card as well. So we have that fight. And, Jim Miller versus Anthony Pettis also got announced for that card. So Pettis going back up to lightweight. So this card is coming together. It might not have, you know, the name value a guy like Robert is looking for, but it definitely has some good matchups that are shaping up to be, I think, very fan friendly.
Those are some good fights.
Yeah.
Miller and Pettis should be a tremendous lightweight fight. I'm anxious to see Nunes and Shevchenko over 5 rounds. They had a really good 3-round fight. And Shevchenko is also, you know, the clear number one contender.
She looks like she's just getting better each time out.
I think it's I don't know if we want to touch on this later, but I know it's been discussed that the UFC might be introducing a women's flyweight, which is a fine division.
So the now look, this is not a fake news situation here, Robert. The UFC sent out a press release. We even got this press release saying the Ultimate Fighter season 26 would feature a new UFC women's flyweight division, and it would be a tournament to crown the first UFC women's flyweight champion. However, then Dana White and company walked it back and said, you know, it's an idea we're thinking about. It's not yet official or confirmed, even though they technically sent out a press release confirming it. It's in discussions that this is what's going to be for the Ultimate Fighter 26, but they walked back their announcement saying that's what's going to happen. So we might get a new 125-pound women's division, which
I'm okay with that division being introduced more so than featherweight for women, because look how that's worked out.
There are women not in the UFC who can fight in that division, and there are probably some women at strawweight and maybe even bantamweight who are maybe better suited for.
Oh, Shevchenko. Shevchenko's a natural 125er. That is her natural fighting weight class.
Maybe, but maybe a Joanne Calderwood or Valerie Letourneau, who has.
Now Letourneau's in Bellator now, but no,
yeah,
no,
I know.
But Calderwood, Calderwood's talked in the past about a nasty weight cut it is for her to strawweight.
But it was a nasty. It was the same for Valerie Letourneau, and I think that's the main reason she's not in the UFC anymore, is because she couldn't handle the weight cut. So. I think I'm not against it in theory, definitely more so than women's featherweight, which, you know, whatever. But I don't know what's going to happen with that division, but it's in discussions right now. But they haven't made a final decision yet.
The only thing I would, and I don't know, maybe this is just me having a theatrical moment, but I would wait to see if Joanna and Shevchenko both win. Very real possibilities in both fights. I think it would be because Joanna said in the past, if there is a flyweight division, she would fight. She wants that belt too, because she is Joanna, champion of all the universe. And I'm not arguing with her on that, by the way. And Shevchenko is, again, 125 is more her ideal fighting weight, but she can't make 115. And there is no 125. She fights at 135, and again, very successful. But I think it would be cool if you got those two, the champion of strawweight and the champion of bantamweight, to fight at flyweight for the first ever flyweight belt. Because I think both of them have mentioned that they have no problem fighting in both weight classes.
What do you do with their other divisions and titles?
Take this for whatever you want. Joanna said she'd be happy to defend both belts. She just alternate.
Well, you know, Michael Bisping said he'd be happy to defend his belt against GSP and then fight Yoel Romero in 6 weeks. And look where we are.
I tend to believe Joanna more than I would Bisping at this point.
Okay, whatever.
Now, again, and maybe that's just me having a touch for the theatrical at the moment. I don't know.
Okay.
Speaking of Michael Bisping,
we have George St. Pierre was talking last week, and he says he'll be ready to fight Michael Bisping after October. He posted a video message on Twitter. I cleared my entire schedule to get ready for training camp after the summer so I can fight you any time after October. You pick the date. Let's get it on. GSP has also sort of suggested he'd like the fight to happen at Madison Square Garden, so... God help us. I don't know if this fight will happen, but all right. So my issue is George St. Pierre can't fight until maybe November at the earliest. It would make sense if Bisping fought someone like Yoel Romero or Robert Whittaker right now. And if you've read my column in the last week, you know how I've promoted that I want to see Robert Whittaker fight for the middleweight title. So we have that, and then we have GSP saying, you know, he can't fight until such and such time, and Bisping's not going to risk losing this fight with GSP, and if the fight even does become signed, who knows, you know, look, so much happens before a fight is even supposed to take place. Guys get hurt. Guys fail drug tests. Guys don't make weight. And it's just so much of a production just for guys to walk in to the octagon and set foot across from one another. And I'm just so frustrated we have to hold up the entire division for this long to accommodate this super fight, which we might not even, you know, there's no guarantee it'll even take place. And I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, here's what bothers me about this. One, you're holding up one of the better divisions at the moment. Middleweight's in the best position it's been in years. We're not talking about a division that we can play around with while guys sort themselves out. There's legitimate contenders. And there's contenders people are excited to see. Both Whittaker and Romero have good fan bases. They've had great fights. They've had great moments. You can sell either of them. What bothers me is, look, I say all the time, and it gets brought up, you know, fighters are tremendous liars. It's part of the job. One of the exceptions that proves that seems to be George St. Pierre, because he's one of the most honest guys in the sport. When he came back and he said, I'm ready to sign a new deal. I will be ready to fight fourth quarter of 2017. Those were his words. I don't know why we all thought, okay, he'll be ready to fight in the summer. I really don't. I don't understand the thought process there behind, okay, we'll announce GSP versus Bisping. And then we'll get George to walk up his timeline. They'll fight summer, you know, July, August. And then we can have, you know, and then we can do, you know, the winner of that defending the belt against a contender, whoever that happens to be. George always said fourth quarter, and he's always had a penchant for wanting to fight in Madison Square Garden. So he's going to look at that date and he's going to hold to it. And I'm not opposed to any of that necessarily, but the fact that you then went ahead and said, okay, it's going to be Bisping and GSP. You're holding up an entire division that is stacked with talent for essentially the rest of the year. And you're just really, really banking on neither of these guys having an issue, which, as Jeff detailed, there's any number of issues that can happen. Heck, with these two, we could have a visa issue. I don't know if Bisping lives in Los Angeles right now or not. I forget exactly.
Bisping lives in Los Angeles. There wouldn't be an issue on his end.
Okay. Then you could run into a visa issue with GSP. It's unlikely, but it is still possible. And there's all these things that could go wrong. You're holding up a whole division, a division with talent and with top fighters. I mean, again, there's other divisions. Like, no one cares if Daniel Cormier decides he wants to fight at heavyweight. I mean, look. That division is kind of screwed. So there's no real harm in him taking a super fight necessarily, or taking a money fight, since that's the word getting thrown around. Were that circumstance to arrive, this is a division that has viable contenders. The biggest knock on Conor McGregor not defending the lightweight belt is that, well, you're holding up the lightweight division, man. This is the most stacked division in the sport. There's two or three guys. I mean, there's two off the top of my head, and give it another 2 weeks, and we might have a third enter into that conversation of guys who are deserving of title shots, and it's all being held up. And again, in this instance, I'd really rather they had just not announced Bisping versus GSP. If you want to do GSP versus whoever the middleweight champion is, fine. I'm okay. I don't love that, but I understand the need for money. That I'm annoyed with, okay, let's put the title on hold until then, because we really want it to be Bisping versus GSP. Well, Bisping shoots another crappy direct-to-DVD movie.
Why does GSP need such a long time?
I have no idea. And I don't know, and honestly, I don't... That's his business. I don't especially care.
After those recent gym pictures, it seems a little suspicious, Robert.
Look, if he just doesn't want to fight until then, that's on him. That's his prerogative. If he just decided, nah, I don't want to fight until I can fight in Madison Square Garden. I don't care if that's what he decided. I care that the UFC decided, okay, we'll hold up this division in hopes of this fight holding together. That's what bothers me.
You weren't concerned about seeing those photos of him sporting the GH gut.
I haven't seen them. And I don't especially care.
And look. If you're upset that I made that insinuation, it's an insinuation made by Michael Bisping. So Bisping put that out there himself.
Well, Bisping holds about as much credibility as Chael Sonnen with me at this point.
Okay.
No, I mean, look, again, for whatever the reason, that's when he wants to fight. I don't care. That's on him.
Maybe he's cycling.
Maybe he is. Maybe he's nursing an injury that he wants to have recovered all the time. Maybe he just doesn't want to fight. Maybe he wants to enjoy the summer. I don't know. And really, I don't care. Any fighter that says I'm not ready to fight until X date and I won't be fighting until then, I'm generally okay with that. I believe he's in the USADA testing pool, so even if he's cycling, there's still the chance that if he is, he'll get caught. And assuming, you know, the USADA, well, he's Canadian, so it would be under the WADA prerogative, but either way, look, they're independent contractors. If they say I'm not available until X date, I mean, really the only thing they're losing out on is money. It's on the UFC to handle that in an appropriate manner relative to the totality of the sport. And in this case, I think they dropped the ball on that.
Well, I'm frustrated right now.
I don't blame you. I am too.
I want Robert Whittaker. Look, Robert Whittaker is the guy I want to see fight for the belt right now. I mean, before it was Jacare, but, I mean, Jacare was the guy that lost to Whittaker, and I think Whittaker should get the shot.
I would have no problem with them remaking Whittaker versus Bisping. None whatsoever.
Bisping's upset that, like, everyone's hating on him now for taking this fight with GSP. But, I mean, what does he really expect? I think the thing with Conor McGregor is false equivalence, because I think plenty of people are being critical about what McGregor is doing right now.
Yeah.
But I think Bisping can't expect there to be...
McGregor just has the cult of Conor around him that makes enough noise about him being, you know, the second coming of whatever you're... deity happens to be.
We shouldn't doubt and discount Michael Bisping's accomplishments in this sport, because the man, whether you like it or not, Robert, the man is a legend. I think he is a future Hall of Famer, and
Hall of Famer unequivocally.
He has forged an impressive legacy for this sport that you can never really take away from him. But I think it's also if he's really upset about the backlash he's facing right now, I think he's being rather naive that he didn't really suspect it to happen, because he's waiting all this time for a super fight with GSP. And look, I get that he's almost 40, and he wants to cash out. This is his opportunity to win the lottery and cash out of this sport and probably make his life and his family's life secure for decades. I get that. But you're still a competitive athlete. And no matter what we say about this sport or the way it's booked, this is still a sport. yes, there's still, like, entertainment involved. There's still, like, you know, creative choices with booking, blah, blah, blah. But it's still a sport. Guys still get, you know, guys still get inside of the octagon and they fight, and we're going to see who the better fighter is. And with that all in mind, you can't, like, just sit out when there are contenders there to fight you and just say, no, I want to sit out so I can get the biggest money fight possible. People don't like that. And whether it's fair or not, and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to earn as much money as possible. I think he does. But, there, you know, I think it's also a fact that, look, there are guys he should be fighting that he's not fighting right now in service of his super fight goals. So, I mean, don't be mad that people are upset about that. People should be upset about it because – at the end of the day, this is still a sport, no matter what. This is still an athletic competition. And people want to see the most competitive, toughest competitions possible in this arena. And Bisping is avoiding those matchups for money. And I get why he wants the money, but it's still going to upset people. And they're not wrong. So he's going to have to learn to deal with that. Or he could man up and he could fight Romero. He could fight Whitaker and just take the risk. There's always – I mean, risk is inherent with his profession. There's always going to be – there's a risk that GSP could beat him. That risk is – I mean, the risk is always there, Robert. You can never eliminate it entirely.
Nah, I agree completely. I mean, I know why he's doing it. I know why the fans are upset. I even know why the UFC's doing it, even though I think it's stupid. I understand all their motivations.
Well, look.
And you all just had better
be. GSP fight. Look, McGregor's out of the picture right now. And whenever it happens, GSP returning to the UFC, it's going to be huge. And it's going to it's going to give them probably their biggest number of the year, whenever it happens, if not one of their biggest numbers. So I get that, but I don't like that we're holding.
It's the timetable that's the issue in this instance.
Yeah, that's just what I feel like. They announced this fight too quickly when Bisping probably could have fought Yoel Romero, and then they could have set this fight up. But whatever. It's not my decision, unfortunately, but that's how I feel.
We're just on a podcast, you know? We're just fans.
Yep.
All right, was there anything else we wanted to touch on?
I mean, there were some other items, but if there's anything else you want to touch on, go ahead.
Oh, the only thing that I think sticks in my mind, because it happened recently, Kelvin Gastelum's punishment
right.
got
that
handed down for his failed drug test. His win over Vitor Belfort has been overturned into a no contest. He was fined 20% of his purse and has a 6-month suspension.
Three
All
months.
Right.
Three months.
Thank you.
Retroactively to March 11th. So he's got about a month left, basically.
Yeah. I want to say this. I've been on here in the past, and I've said explicitly why marijuana should remain on the drug test for in-competition testing. No one with a fully functional brain calls it a performance-enhancing drug. That being said, again, it does impair you. You can't fight impaired. Now, there's issues with marijuana testing and its accuracy, and that's a whole other can of worms. I don't want to get into that right now. Because, again, there's validity to that on that side of the argument. I'm not going to deny that either. I'm a little surprised. I'm not sure that a failed drug test for marijuana should be grounds for a result being overturned. The fine, the suspension might be a little lengthy for my personal tastes, but I cannot. But, you know, failed drug test results in suspension. I'm okay with that. Fine. For, you know, failing a drug test. I'm okay with that. I'm not necessarily sure I'm completely on board with a failed marijuana test resulting in the result being overturned.
I'm
because
it was a blatant disregard for the rules. And Gastelum rolled the dice on his career. He should have known better.
Yeah, I agree. Again, it's just there's just different. I'm very aware that there's different effects that different substances have, and I'm not sure.
3 months, Robert. 3 months for a guy like Elvis Gastelum is nothing. He has to. This was not an out of competition test. It was in competition. He has to, and he look. Gastelum has a repeated record of, I think, a total and complete lack of discipline. And he constantly talks about, I just have to discipline myself so I can make welterweight, blah, 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 and I'll be a welterweight champion. You have to discipline him. And you have to make, he has to feel the sting of this pretty hard, because 20%, I mean, look, he's had fines before, and he's continued to make these issues happen. Now he's lost a big win on his record. And I think that's a major sting to him. And I think it has to happen. I don't know the validity of this test and how accurate these tests are. I don't know, because all of this, I think the regulation was done through the Brazilian Athletic Commission, though I think the testing was done through USADA. But now a lot of people are attacking USADA's testing methods and their regulating methods, you know, whether you think they're fair or not. But I have no problem with Gastelum losing this win. He deserved to lose it.
I don't know. Again, certain substances, I absolutely agree it should be overturned. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure that one sits necessarily completely right with me, but I'm also not sure how you would, whether or not that should be examined further, to what degree it should be.
I don't think whatever he had in his system, I don't think it would have changed the result. But again, it's a blatant, you know, when you blatantly disregard the rules like that, I feel like there has to be a consequence, Robert. I don't think, you know, other than, you know, whatever you think, Robert, this feels like a slap on the wrist to me, all things considered. This is a minor punishment for Gastelum, considering his past indiscretions.
I don't know. Again, I'm not sure I'm all right with setting up marijuana as having an impact on the outcome of a match and consequently allowing us to overturn the results. That's more my gripe here than necessarily a few of the other things. But again,
well,
I don't know.
I think it's the same thing with diuretics. You know, does taking a diuretic really help you win a fight? I don't think it does.
It helps you make weight, and making weight is and cheating to make weight to me is subsequently the same as, you know.
But I don't think it helps you. I don't think it gives you an advantage for a fight.
It gives you an advantage making weight.
Yeah, but even if you don't make weight, you can still fight. And I don't think – and diuretics can hurt you for a fight as well. A diuretic can damage you more during a fight than it does to give you an advantage. But
– I also think there have been fights where the result hasn't been overturned because of diuretics. I'd have to double-check that.
Right. Well, my feeling is there are substances – that aren't going to give you an advantage during a fight that I think would still cause a win to be overturned. And I don't necessarily disagree with that.
It's a weird spot. And that's kind of why
it's not cheating. You're taking banned substances and there is some culpability there. And there has to be a culpability.
I agree. And for me, it's just, I'm not sure I'm necessarily as thrilled with the precedent that's been set down as far as marijuana having an impact on the outcome.
You're soft on drug testing and cleaning up the sport, just like Luke Thomas and Ariel Helwani, and you're soft, just like you were soft on Lyoto Machida.
I maintain Machida got a raw deal.
I want the sport to be clean.
I just want it to be done as in a better fashion
Machida
than it's being done
appeal,
right now.
Machida didn't defend himself. He didn't appeal the test result, and he was given less than what the regulated amount was, which was 2 years, and instead they gave him a year and a half. So there you go. To me, that's on Machida, not on USADA, what happened there.
I even understand why he didn't necessarily appeal it. Because he took the substance just shouldn't be on the list. It's more my issue. But,
I think there's a lot more to it than that. There's more depth to it than that.
And maybe there is. Maybe he didn't want him looking any closer at it. I don't know. I mean, I really don't. And in some ways, I'm very happy USADA is involved. We are, in many ways, better off now than we were prior to this.
Right.
That in no way, shape, form, or fashion means I think we have arrived at the ideal scenario. And I'm not going to pretend otherwise simply because we're better off than we used to be.
All right. Well, I'm not saying things don't need to change with the testing policy, but I think hopefully the years go by, we will get to a more refined and sharper place where all of these issues are more clear and more spelled out, and we get to a point where everything makes more sense. And maybe there will be discussions like what you've suggested, Robert, that maybe the wind shouldn't be overturned for marijuana and certain substances, but we'll see. We'll see where it gets to in the future.
Yeah. And I want a clean sport. I refuse to accept that this is the best that it will ever be.
Fair enough.
I'm not going to stop beating that drum at the moment, but
Fair enough.
I'm just a fan. At the end of the day, that's all I am. All right. I believe that's everything major I had on my plate to talk about. So what do you got to plug?
All right. So I can say for a fact now that I have seen Alien Covenant, the newest installment of the Alien franchise by Ridley Scott. I will be doing an official review of that. The film from Guy Ritchie, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. I'll be reviewing that. You can check out my official review of the number one movie of the weekend, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I saw that early. Check out my column on why Robert Whittaker, why I feel he should be the top contender for the middleweight title and why I want to see him fight for the belt right now. So take a look at that. And I'm looking forward to UFC and us talking about that next weekend. So it should be fun, and I hope the card is just as good as it looks, Robert.
So do I.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks, Jeff. All right, we will be back next week. We will be reviewing UFC 211. Next event after that is the Sunday the 28th. So we will be back on the 21st. We'll be previewing that. Then we'll have the 28th. I gotta double check some of the times on that event, because if they're starting it like Saturday evening, but it's in Stockholm, it's in Sweden. So if they're starting it like Saturday evening there, could be closer to Sunday morning as far as it goes. I don't know. I got to double check the local start times on that. Because if that event is Sunday morning, then we might not be on the 21st, and then we'll do the show that evening, the review show. Anyway, all right, we'll figure that out. That's a weirdly placed. Again, there's specific timings involved there that I will sort out and have more information for you next week when we review UFC 211. As for myself, this Tuesday, Mark Radulich and I will be reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It's going to kick off a string of a lot of consecutive Damn You Hollywood shows. You got this one, then we'll have King Arthur, which I'm forcing Mark to go to more than anything else. But summer movie season is upon us, and Mark and I are going to be live every week for a while doing that. So if you haven't heard enough of me, by all means, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, Mark and I do Damn You Hollywood, and we'll be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 this evening, or that Tuesday. So stop by. Feel free to listen in. Mark and I usually have a good time. Again, I'll have coverage of UFC 211 on Saturday. I hope you'll all stop by, say hello. 8 hours is a long time, guys. I might need some moral support for that one. So hope you all do that. That's everything I've got. Until next time, for Jeff Harris, I'm Robert Winfrey. We'll be back next Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, thank you all again for listening, and please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.